your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. Charlotte is off tonight. We're going to be speaking about the situation in Turkey based upon an article that I've just published on our front page entitled Turkey Intrigue. And there's not only a PDF file, but there's a Word for Windows file. And also you can read it online with the HTML files. So go in there and feel free to read those or download anything that you want of any of the other files and so forth. And email them to your friends. The reason I'm taking on Turkey on this first hour, and the first hour will be on Turkey Intrigue, and we're going to talk about the situation in Turkey. The second hour will be with Dr. James Vaughn. It'll be a rebroadcast that I did discussing the British East India Company. And it's very important to see in geopolitical terms, world geopolitical terms, you could say, how the British East India Company figures in keeping China subdued through opium importing into China. But anyway, that'll be our second hour with Dr. James Vaughn. And I hope you'll enjoy that. Look forward to it. This first hour is important. I know some of our listening audience will say, why are you discussing Turkey? Mr. Butler, what are you doing? We've got enough problems here. Well, it's a microcosm in Turkey of what could happen here. That's why we're discussing Turkey tonight. And also the dynamics of people that start out with some measure, you could say, of popularity and backing from the public. And then, for one reason or another, they begin to accumulate money and power, and it just goes to their head. And then we see an evolution, usually, into a dictatorial type of regimes. And that's what I fear that Turkey is headed at this time. First, to understand the modern-day Turkey, I think we need to go back to the founding of the Republic. And basically, the Republic was founded by Ataturk, and before him came a movement of what they call Young Turks. Young Turks were responsible for the Armenian massacre, which many people today are trying to to deny that that happened. But there is good evidence that there was a massacre of the Armenians in eastern part of Turkey by perhaps half a million into the million and a half figure is mentioned at times. So that did happen. Well, in the early 20s, Ataturk comes to power and establishes the modern Turkey Republic. And his party that still exists today is called the CHP Party. And it's a Kemalist social liberal party that has secret society backing, means that it's backed fully by the Masons, who actually are still in control, even though you could say Erdogan has taken much of their power away from them and is accelerating moment by moment a complete takeover of Turkey and denying the secret society group power. The first Masonic Lodge was created in Istanbul in approximately 1721. The Levantines, mainly Genoese people living in the tower quarters, founded that first Masonic Lodge there. So Freemasonry goes back to Turkey, back to this for 1721 date. Now, Where it really started changing, though, you had the Ottoman Empire, which was the leading, you could say, nation, an empire of Islam in the whole Middle East. In fact, they dictated, they had the supreme power in their hands of Islam and the administration of the religion itself. So what happened was Salonika, a city in Greece, which was then part of the Ottoman Empire, and today is Thessaloniki is the name of the city, about the third largest city in Greece today. Well, in that city, you could say they had a Masonic lodge, and within that Masonic lodge, there was a secret group that someone that we call the Doma today. Later in my article that I published, and I'm going to speak in very general terms this evening during this first hour to really take apart this subject and go into each and every click off would take several hours. Wayne Mattson wrote a fine two part article, and I've embedded the click off in this my particular article. So you can go in there and read those in detail about the Doma. And the Doma were a cryptic Jewish group that had embedded themselves in the Freemasonic Lodge there in Salonika, and went along with the Freemasons into Turkey when they finally invaded Turkey and eventually manifested in Ataturk complete freeing or taking over from the Ottoman Empire, Turkey itself, and the establishment of the Republic. In 2013, there was that was the anniversary, the 90th anniversary of the founding of the Republic of Turkey. And standing before the mausoleum of Ataturk, they came from all over, you could say, to Ankara, okay, and there's a mausoleum there of Ataturk, and they stood in front of this mausoleum in Ataturk and gave their respects. These were Freemasons by the hundreds. I don't know the exact number, but Turkey today still has a very strong Masonic body of men, their members. Now, what has changed a lot in this is the Gulen movement. Gulen today is residing in Pennsylvania, and there was an article recently discussing, he was being accused by Erdogan just recently about being behind this failed military coup that just occurred in Turkey. But there was a recent interview that was done with Gulen, and I have that in my article. And he denies being a part of that particular uprising or coup that failed in Turkey. But we know for fact that the Gulen movement is a very widespread and a worldwide movement of, some would describe it as moderate Islam, but coupled with scientific schools, science. Islam-based and coupled with science seems to be what he's been able to put together and established charter schools all over the country. In Texas, they're called the Harmony Science Schools. And so that's where you'll find Gulen operating in Texas. And I believe he has schools, charter schools, in 26 states in the United States. And you'll find him operating. He's been accused, and there have been investigations by the FBI as to his intentions through these schools, okay? Graham Fuller, whose name came up in the Boston bombing that occurred up there, he's CIA, Graham Fuller is, and his opinion early on was he was one of the early advocates of using Muslim Brotherhood and Gulen to advance U.S. foreign policy. So you have Graham Fuller figuring into this thing. And also, in my article, this New Yorker magazine with Gulen is very informative also. He's putting forward himself as some demure, very humble, imam, and he's just, you know, founding, he's establishing, continue to keep the faith, the Islam faith, and not any wild or radical type of preaching has he ever been accused of in this country. So that's what he's putting forth on that basis. A Lieutenant Colonel Levent Turkkan was captured shortly after this failed coup, and he was an aide to the Chief of Turkey's General Staff of AKAR, okay, and he admits to having links to the Gulen terrorist organization. From a young boy, he says he's 5 or 6 years of old age, and he was recruited. And so there's a fine article there that Der Spiegel has that I click off to in this particular white paper that I wrote recently and put up on my site. Der Spiegel in German is the Mirror, you know, but that's a pretty good magazine. And also we have Siebel Edmonds and James Corbett out of Japan. Siebel is here in the States, East Coast. And then Spiros Sokras. I believe he works with Siebel Edmonds. And there's a video in there that they did on the 17th of July about the revolt and so forth and the military coup that failed. And she was of the opinion that maybe it was a dry run, but no, it had some pretty large units that were involved. But I believe one of the problems with the military coup is that the military intelligence and some of the MIT, which is the Turkish intelligence, got wind of the coup in advance and started contacting some of the higher up officers, and some of those higher up officers actually contributed to stalling this coup. Plus, the coup plotters and conspirators had to set up the coup early, had to move it up by around 6 hours by some estimates. And so in moving up the coup early, and then some of the top leadership in the military got wind of it, along with the MIT, which is the intelligence agency of Turkey. And then this put Erdogan on notice, and he left his hotel when he was on vacation. And about 15 minutes to 45 minutes later, there was a commando team that came into that hotel there to either take him out or capture him. So Erdogan eluded capture or death by this commando team, this special operations team. So these people were dealing with really a serious situation. Let's get back to a little bit talking about Ataturk. When he established the republic, it was based upon what they call, it became known as Kemalism. And Kemalism basically is represented symbolically by a graphic of six eras, okay? And each era stands for one of the fundamental pillars of the ideology of Kemalism. And basically those six pillars forming the ideology of Kemalism would be in this order. Republicanism, nationalism, populism, secularism, and statism, and revolutionism. What he did also at this time was he created the Presidency of Religious Affairs. And in the preamble, which we'll talk about here in a second, when Ataturk set up the republic, he did something very ingenious. He created a state that could be described as licit, L-A-I-C-I-T, licit. And what that word means is that it's a principle of the separation of church and state. So the Constitution, the preamble, as part of the Constitution, there's a preamble. And within that preamble, and I have that in the article itself, one of the phrases is this, quoting, quote, beginning of quote, that sacred religious feelings should absolutely not be involved in state affairs and politics as required by the principle of secularism, quotation closed. And what they basically did, they set up a mechanism by which to administer the Islam religions under the name of the Presidency of Religious Affairs. They've heavily funded that since its beginnings and the founding of that Presidency of Religious Affairs to keep it separate and apart from, okay, the existing secular government. They did not want Islam in any way to begin to take over and rule Turkey and become and convert it into a theocracy. Now, I believe that's what the danger is right now of Erdogan, is that he's seeking to change the republic into a religious theocracy. So that's what some people are wary about, of all these mass arrests and detaining of thousands and canceling of passports and so forth. But so this is very dangerous territory that we're in now. When Erdogan he got into politics early on. He was jailed at one time, so he's had a very, very, you could say, struggle of his own, okay, within this system itself, to try to attain hit the position that he's reached at this time. So he finally formed this party, okay, this AKP party, and out of that came the ability for him to begin, okay, to really exert some power, okay, and around this party he could manage and he could begin to elect followers of and supporters and members of that party. And in this way, he was able to extend his influence and power. So the AKP party was started with Abdullah Gül in about August of 2001. Erdogan, along with Abdullah Gül, founded the AKP party. It eventually, in 2002 and 2003, it won a majority in the parliament election. This General Assembly, it's a unicameral system with one grand General Assembly. And at that time, in 2003, he was appointed Prime Minister. Okay. And this election of him as Prime Minister, he served from 2003 to 2014, at which time he was elected the President of Turkey. And so he's been president since 2014 of Turkey. Now, what has happened since then? In the meantime, when 2001, when he established the AKP party, and then in 2014 he became president. In the meantime, as prime minister, okay, he started reorganizing the National Security Council and reforming it to suit his own power base. And what had happened in the past was that the military had been the majority members on the National Security Council and could outvote anyone else as a voting bloc. So what he primarily did was, the president and him as prime minister, he added the National Defense Minister, the Internal Affairs Minister, the Foreign Affairs Minister, and what basically did, he weighed with ministers himself and the president a voting bloc against the military votes within the National Security Council in the period of August 2007 to 2014. Now, during this period, there were great scandals that abounded, and they had to do with Erdogan and Sledgehammer. And what basically happened during this period was, Gulen still being a supporter of Erdogan, had a great influence through his Gulen networks. The Gulen networks had been operating in Turkey for decades, and we would say that since they had CIA backing, then we would have to say that the secret society boys were also members and in good standing within the Gulen networks and movement. But during this period, surprisingly enough, because the Sledgehammer and the Ergenagin scandals were so overwhelmingly negative, and they exposed some really top-level military officers, general and admirals, who ended up, several of those ended up with life sentences. And so he was able to take away from him and to eliminate some of his most fierce and high, you could say, officed or ranked enemies that were against his takeover. And basically, this is the struggle that we're seeing between Erdogan and the other, his opposition. His opposition is made up of Freemasons and, you could say, military, the Gulen movement, which would, you could say, they were Freemasons already, many of those. The judiciary and the military, many secret society members were also in there, see. So what we've got here is a struggle that is continuing to go on. And this recent coup that occurred only gave Erdogan a reason and a motive to justify to a complete takeover. And that's where he's headed now during these latest going ons and so forth. The duties, he's right now, let's get back to some of the problems that he has encountered as prime minister before he was elected president. And he was prime minister from 2003 to 2014, and Abdullah Gul was the president at that time. And then in 2014, Erdogan was elected president. In the 2013 period, there became known as a scandal, as a 2013 scandal. And basically, it had to do with trade that was ongoing and illegal, according to America, U.S., and European interest with Iran. There had been a recent arrest in Florida of a gold dealer, okay? So getting back to this scandal, okay? This scandal that was uncovered in 2013 involved about 52 people that were connected to his AKP party, which is called the Justice and Development Party, okay? So there's, in my article, I have a Wikipedia treatment there, and it goes into detail. What basically was going on was that Iran was having trouble gaining foreign currency for paying. You know, no one would accept their currency for payment. And so what happened was a gold dealer out of the area, who was actually also a Turkish, citizen. He had actually Iranian citizenship and Turkish citizenship. And he had a third passport that he was carrying when he was arrested. These people are pretty pretty international. And he was arrested in Florida, and I'll have his name for you here in a second. It's so difficult to keep up, okay, that it's not easy, okay, to get this down and talk specifically about it without some time and trouble. And this article, okay, is an article that took some time to put together, but you have to jump around a little bit, see, in this thing. And so it gets a little bit difficult, okay? His name was Zarab, okay? And this man was arrested in Florida recently, this spring, about March, I believe, okay? And Reza Zarab was arrested and is being detained by the federal government. And he was indicted for violating trade sanctions against Iran. And there was evidence he was trading gold for Iranian oil and gas, which actually on that Turkey was securing the oil and gas. The gold was provided by the Turks, and there is an indictment in my article, the indictment of him by our federal government. And he was arrested in March. He tried to, put forward a motion to have a house arrest, but the judge wasn't going for that. During this period where these trade sanctions were being violated, the public itself, the Turkish public, was receiving articles, okay, written by some very courageous journalists from different news organizations and magazines and broadcast type of networks. And what happened was that there were what they call the Giza Park protests as a result of this. Okay. And Giza Park was, I have it on my site, if you go in to the Secret Truth, okay, .com, and scroll down, and then you'll be able to see the articles in there. And then you can get into the Giza Park protest after that. There were virtually thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that showed up in Giza Park. It started out as a protest against the redevelopment of the park, but as this 2013 scandal started unwinding and becoming the unrest began on 28th of May 2013, and initially it was to contest the urban redevelopment of the plan for the Istanbul Taşim Giza Park. And the protests were sparked by outrage at the violent eviction of a sit-in at the park protesting the plan. The police went in there with gas and pepper spray and evicted those people the first time. And so they came back and started really protesting in a serious way. You know what I mean? It's estimated that in the early stages, 3.5 million of Turkey's 80 million people are estimated to have taken an active part in almost 5,000 demonstrations across Turkey connected with the original Giza Park protest. And so it was no small thing. But it was a result, like I said a little earlier, of not only this development plan that they were against, but the violent eviction of the sit-in that occurred because of that redevelopment. And then, in addition to that, very brave journalists and news reporters were outing this scandal that involved Erdogan and some of his close members of the AKP party. One of those members of his party was arrested during this scandal, and they searched his home and found $4.5 million in shoeboxes and took him away. But later on, as jumbled as this whole thing has become, Erdogan went in there and started discharging judges and prosecutors and removing this person, that person. And then also, in addition to that, he jailed by the dozens many of the reporters and journalists that had written about this 2013 violation of sanctions that occurred between Turkey and Iran in opposition to American and European interest. The election in 2014, what Erdogan was successful at doing was suppressing to a large extent that 2013 scandal, and by the jailing of these and also closing down of newspapers and things like that occurred also. So he was successful at suppressing that and that exposure of the 2013 scandal, and effectively he was elected as president in 2014. Now, one of the things that I really believe that we're talking about here is that his opponents have been trying to unseat him and get rid of him for a long time, okay? And I believe as as these scandals got worse and worse, and also it was revealed that Erdogan's government was trading with ISIS for the oil coming out of Syria. That's just an additional, you could say, corruption that was exposed. And that's only occurred in this last year. So that, in addition to what occurred previously in the violations of the sanctions between Turkey and Iran, and Turkey was trading with Iran out of gold for oil and gas. So this Zarab guy sitting down in the feds, being detained by the feds, if he starts spilling his guts and starts giving a full connection, then Erdogan's government is about had it. So Erdogan is confronted by the good old boy network that finally resolved to get rid of him. And that's what this last military coup was about, was to go in there and rid themselves of Erdogan's government for good. But they got wind of it. It was moved up in time. The conspirators, it was not organized. There were too many hands in it. They started paying off. There's indications that we started paying off several of the... we started dividing. Here's what one article said, and we don't know how reliable some of this information is. But they have an American general, I won't name the name, that says that he organized it over the last year and divided the military into three groups, those that were not going along with it, those that were neutral, and then those that were friendly to the uprising. And just to start discussing it around a year ago would mean that it could easily be found out about. So we don't know for sure how much advance notice Erdogan had to this military coup that was launched in July. But it was not successful, and there was dissension among some of the upper ranks of the military, and the MIT had advanced information. Oh, another thing that occurred for sure that came out, and I believe the Russians verified this, was the Russians, through their intercepts, much like NSA, they have an interception capability. They were intercepting irregular communications of the Turkish military, and I believe they notified Erdogan about 3 hours previous to the takeover. But the conspirators of the military coup moved up their schedule 6 hours in advance and still were not able to affect a successful coup. The story goes that Erdogan was given notice of this in advance and left his resort area where he was on vacation and missed being, you could say, assassinated or captured by a special forces group by 15 minutes to 45 minutes. He got into the air and was flying to Istanbul and putting out the word through communications to his followers to turn out in the streets. By at that time, there had been military blockades set up on some of the main bridges in Istanbul and other key places. And also, the conspirators of the military coup went in and made certain statements at some of the broadcast networks there in Istanbul and ordered the people to stay inside and not to be out on the street. And they were going to enforce a curfew soon. Well, Erdogan, on the other hand, still had a large following because he was able to suppress the being exposed in this 2013 corruption and scandal. So he still had a large following throughout Turkey and in Istanbul. And so he called the people out on the streets to confront the soldiers that were trying to carry out this military coup. And so they started getting in the way of tanks and carriers and talking to the soldiers and taking over some of the tanks and pulling the people out of the tanks. And they actually, you could say, stopped much of the military action in the streets. In the meantime, we get back to the military who, there's 42 helicopters missing from a major military base in Turkey, in Sirlik Air Base area, military base. There's about 42 helicopters missing. That's just one one of the details in this. So the elections that were occurring through this period, okay, many would state that the election of 2014 was very contentious, okay? There were power outages, and they were blamed on cats getting into the transformers and stuff by the people ahead of the electric power system in different cities in Istanbul. We think there was election fraud going on. Even in the election of June of 2015, there's evidence, insider evidence, that there was also election irregularities, let's say, but we have these sources that are unnamed sources, see, but they don't always tell you exactly who they were, because if they were, they would be arrested, you know. But anyway, coming out, leaking out. Now, in addition to that, we had WikiLeaks that dumped a bunch of AKP emails, okay, on the web. So Erdogan's government, outlawed WikiLeaks and banned them from Turkey. And, we are getting a little bit of this advanced information on, about 3 p.m. on July 15th, the National Intelligence Organization called MIT got information about extraordinary activity at the Air Land School Command in Ankara, where helicopter training is given to military units. MIT head Finden informed Chief of General Staff Hulusi Akar about the activity at about 4 p.m., sending his deputy to the military headquarters for a meeting with Deputy Chief of Staff Yosar Gurel at about 5:30. In the meantime, in order to confirm the information, the Land Forces Commander Kolar sent his deputy Uar for an inspection in Ankara at about 6. Finden also went to the military headquarters to meet Akar and Kolak. Akar issued a written statement to all units in Turkey at about 6:30 to close Turkey's entire airspace and to stop all kinds of troop movements, including of aircraft and armored vehicles like tanks. He was the commander-in-chief of all armed forces, Akar was. And so this is where they got some orders out that were contrary to conspirators' plan. Plus, the conspirators then were caught off, off-footed, and they were able to stunt, you could say, the conspiratorial takeover of Turkey. Today, right now, there are passports that were canceled. I've forgotten how many thousands that I saw earlier in here that that came up on a Drudge report, you know. So, I mean, and he's continuing to close down by the hundreds, okay, all kinds of media organizations. So, anyway, you've got an ongoing situation that is headed toward dictatorship, is the way I see it, okay. And it's not going to get any better, okay? And what we have is a continuing dynamic that Erdogan is continuing to arrest more, canceling passports, closing down the media, organizations, newspapers, and so forth. So he can't do anything but proceed towards total dictatorship. This is where I'm afraid. He's going to take all the good old boys out of power. All of the secret society, the Freemasons, and the Gulen Networks movement out of power. And that's where he's headed right now. And he'll replace those people with very loyal Islamic comrades or colleagues of his religious organizations. It remains to be seen whether or not he'll be able to effectively do this. We're talking about a country that has this underground network of men in power for decades, since 1922-23 until today. And so they've never been able to overcome, no one has been able to overcome that network yet. Erdogan has, oh, here it is, right here on Drudge. I just found it. He cancels, Turkey cancels 50,000 passports as President Erdogan tightens noose around suspected dissidents after failed coup. So we have another thing. He canceled the passports of almost 50,000 people following the coup. It's the latest. This is what the article says. It's coming out of the Mirror of in UK. In the latest stage in President Erdogan's clampdown on alleged dissidents in the country, seems his regime's increasingly authoritarian. It comes after they shut down 130 media outlets in a mass purge of the media following the coup attempt. That was just this a day or two ago. So, and now he's canceling all these passports. The Turkish police arrest 60 children for treason after they were made to dress in camouflage and hold guns. It said, he's going all the way to dictatorship. That's what we're seeing in this. So there's no two ways now where he's headed. And to give you an idea of what to look for, and I began to see this early on in my research and writing of the article that I finally came up with, was that he's moving towards an alliance, okay, on some degree with Russia, okay, and it remains to be seen exactly, okay, how this will work out, okay. On this path, okay, that he has established, and somewhere he's had to his advice or whatever, okay, was around the idea that he had to take a more independent path. Nasser, when Nasser started nationalizing the Suez Canal and so forth, he went on a rampage to turn to the Soviet Union for military equipment. And that's what Nasser did. And this is similar in a way of a Middle East country, a large one with 70 million people. And that's pretty good size, beginning to turn to the Soviet Union for a new alliance. See what I mean? Because What's going to happen now? He's coming in for extreme criticism from the West, because this crackdown is going too far. Now it's dictatorial, and there's no doubt that he's headed towards a dictatorship. So the West, being of the secret society bunch anyway, then have been criticizing what he's been doing. See, so the evidence now is real, and it's just overwhelming that he's not going to come back to this. Brzezinski in the Grand Chessboard was talking about the United States exercising power in the Middle East and doing it as long as we were able to control these countries. Then we could keep out the Russian influence. Russia is across the Black Sea, and Crimea is already in Russians' hands across the Black Sea from Turkey. So Erdogan is going to use a newly, you could say, rekindled relationship with Russia to thwart keep us off balance, see, because we still need him as a NATO ally in the Syrian operations, and he also has a long border there on the northern frontier of Syria with part of his southern international border. And also, he was able to open up, you know what I mean, and consolidate several of those revolutionary groups and rebel groups, See, and put those together with the Kurds and others. So it looks like that he's moving, okay, towards this furtherance of a major new alliance with Russia. And that's very dangerous for us. Obama's foreign policy has been just terrible. And that's why any statements being put out by Hillary Clinton, I don't think they have credibility, because they've done nothing and consolidated nothing and had no major success. She went in by force to Libya, and he violated, President Obama violated the War of Powers Act by not disclosing and consulting Congress like he was supposed to. He snubbed them and ignored them. And then we have the Benghazi scandal and blow up, you know. And then they're shipping the arms and stuff into the Syrian rebels, and we've declared that Assad is a terrorist, and so forth. And look at what we've done in Syria. We have devastated that country, and there's hundreds of thousands of people dead and fleeing, if not into the millions. And for what? And now then they've used those immigrants to overrun Europe, because they wanted to destroy the European cultures in those countries and consolidate them under some new internationalist banner of European Union. The European Union is suffering economically right now, and they are out there grabbing for straws. They're trying to reinvent quantitative easing from their own perspective, and it hasn't done any good. The money that they put into these organizations and kept them afloat has not gotten into the economy and stimulated the economy. There's too much debt out there. Joan Vian, when she was living, expressed the same. And, you know, Ravi Batra, SMU economist, is saying in similar opinions. When you have this debt that builds up like it has, and we have over $20 trillion now in debt, and Obama's added $7 or $8 trillion to our debt since he's been in office. So what are we talking about here about good economy and good economics? Our economy is not in good shape. The European Union is not in good shape. The American dollar can do nothing but decline in the future. We're undergoing a tremendous change, a transformation in this country. There's great assaults occurring with Gladio operations and false flag operations and so forth. I know some of these things sound preposterous, and I've studied it for 30 years plus now. So we do have what was important when I said Gladio just a moment ago. That's what was ongoing in Turkey. Turkey was a NATO alliance and member, and still is. I don't know for how much longer. But anyway, they had Gladio operations all over that country. So the good old boys stayed in power by going out and running these terrorists and blaming it on the Kurds or whoever other radical groups was at hand. And so they're not immune from having not done the Gladio. They were right there in the middle. The sledgehammer and the Erginagin, and all those were the scandals that you could tie back to the Gladio. They had these black operations within their military, and it goes on and on and on. And these people just won't learn. Now we get back to men, see, that are head of these countries, and they're not going to come clean with their egos. See, this is the problem that we have with men. It's I know I've said this before, and I've harped on it. And it gets back to what I call the man problem. And the man problem basically is that where men have more, are more inventive and have quite a talent to invent and conjure up and imagine more wrong-headed ways to support that false self and that ego self than women. And in that state, men find themselves as grand leaders and grand kings and gods. They become gods unto themselves, see. So So it goes on and on. And the way that this deal works today is on a synergistic way is that what has happened in the last few years is that you got the commies versus the cronies. Okay. The cronies are exercising their control through the ownership of the central banks. Okay. But they also financing the movements that are backing the commies, you could say. The commies, I'm just using that as a term of socialist and communist and collectivism, okay? So the commies have been funded by the cronies, but they don't know that, see? Now, the reason why the cronies, who are the money changers, you could say, and have a monopoly of money creation and the banking and international finance and so forth, these are the cronies. So they're exercising their rule through crony capitalism, which is monopolistic capitalism. Okay? And this is the way that they've been able to get away with this, is through the ownership of the central bank. So the Federal Reserve, founded in 1913, is a privately owned bank. It's not owned by the feds or anything. They appoint the Federal Reserve chairman, but that's it. And the Federal Reserve usually is closed to being audited or anything else. Ron Paul stood up against this system and is still calling for an audit of the Federal Reserve system. But when you start looking at these candidates, and I don't know about what Trump's readout is, but Hillary is in bed with Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs has been one of the ultimate insiders with the Fed. And the New York Fed is the controlling regional Fed. So Goldman Sachs had put in all those chairmen of the New York Fed all the time. So they run the Fed, and they own the Fed. And they're backing Hillary, and they're giving her hundreds of thousands of dollars for a 30-minute, 40-minute speech. I don't know how long they were. But so they own her. The way that this election here lately, after I watched the GOP last week, and I watched also the Democratic convention this week, and the way it's unfolding here is that there were some major players, and to a man, they're part of the secret society bunch, if you know what I'm talking about here. They're all coming in behind Hillary, and I believe the reason why is that Trump is an unknown about 9/11 on this international trade. He's not for that, and they can't accept that. That's unacceptable for them. Their future power system is enacting these trade unions or these trade agreements, and then exercising a corporate umbrella power that is over and above the corporate legacies of the states, the nation states, the constitutional law of the nation states. So they absolutely have to get in law approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the Atlantic one, okay? Trump comes out against all that, see? So they're totally against him there. But also, a very important unknown, and it's been rumored that he knows all about 9/11 and all this other stuff. So this is another question in their minds, too. They absolutely can't allow him in. Hillary and that bunch is part in there with covering up the 9/11, okay? They're not going to tell us the truth about 9/11, and neither is Obama, and neither was George W. or any of George W. brought us 9/11. But those people and Cheney and all of them are, that's just a major problem that we're dealing with now. During the Democratic convention, there were people that lost their loved ones overseas. Okay? In these wars, they fought in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places. And they cried, and I mean, I have great compassion for their loss. But no one there at that convention had the balls to stand up and talk about 9/11 truth and what this thing is really about. And that is the problem. They're all using 9/11 as a tool to continue to traumatize, to trauma-based, programmed, you could say, our people into manipulating them and controlling them through all of this 9/11 hate that's been generated by that attack on this country. Now, so the people you look at, whether it's on the GOP side or this side, without those people standing up that are not talking about 9/11 truth, and they're just using this. Now, Trump is rumored to know about 9/11. And so they cannot afford to allow him into office with the power of the presidency could go after the 9/11 truth movement. It could go and establish, let's say, this 9/11 truth. In other words, if we had a president that stood for 9/11 truth, then these people, the ultimate insiders, are in big trouble. That's what their opposition to Trump is. I don't like the way he pops off and stuff. He actually gives them ammunition to use against him. And the reason there is his ego. He can't control his ego. And he cannot see himself that well still. And that's the way these people are with a lot of money and a lot of success. They get all caught up in themselves. So some of the accusations and criticisms at the Democratic National Convention of that he's for himself and all that, some of that stuff was a legitimate criticism. So he falls into their traps. I would just wish that Trump would wake up and quit pulling that stuff and putting his foot in his mouth. You know, something about going to smash them for saying this and that. You don't get anywhere with the general public like that. But this is what's been going on, and he just falls into their trap, and then they'll use it against him. And they can easily turn it around on him and say, well, do you want a man with his finger on the nuclear trigger that acts like this? And so he's actually falling into their game. They're gaming him and they're triggering him, and he's falling in with his he gets mad, he gets angry. And then that's another reason they can say, do you want someone that gets angry like this, controlling our nuclear weapon systems? It goes on and on. And those arguments can be effective. Now, on the other hand, Hillary has a very negative trust rating. So what she did with this in this convention, they went back to some of the good things, I think, that Hillary has done. Let's give her some credit here. When she was young and wasn't corrupted by the money and power, she did a lot of good things for children. And also, even along the way, she'd done some things for the empowerment of women. And so I can't say that that's bad or wrong. So she has done some things along the way for women. Okay. We're down to about our last minute here. We want to thank everyone for listening. And we hope we see right now Erdogan's headed toward dictatorship, an alliance on some degree with Russia. And so he's going to be more independent and not going to be working and cooperating with NATO quite like in the past. And Turkey is headed towards a worse situation than even under the good old war network. So that's what I see going on in Turkey tonight. It's ongoing. Erdogan's closing down the country. It's turning into a real tyranny. So anyway, we've got to try to stand up and tell the truth to people, and try to help the Turkish people that truly believe in freedom and liberty. But thank you again for listening, and let's try to help the Turkish people maintain their liberty and freedoms over there. Okay, so we're on every Saturday night, 7 to 9. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.